Welcome to Life Lab with David Ponder and Zach Schaefer. We are the podcast of Experience Experiments.
We give you those experiments via change challenges at the end of each episode.
We created this podcast because we wanted to talk about important topics that can help us all live meaningful lives.
You might agree with what we have to say, or you might disagree. But the point there is that you get something new to think about.
There's no edits and no gimmicks. Our entire point is to help you take action and live a better life.
You only get one life to live, so you may as well make the most of it.
Good morning, everybody, on this crisp late winter's morn. Hope you're excited for today's topic. And I must be honest with you. I think it sucks, Dave. I think you should not have selected this topic this morning.
Oh, yeah. I like how you're putting the blame on me.
So, our topic is confrontation. Yeah. Which is interesting because we just talked about conflict last week. And we had arranged these topics so long ago. And at first, I'm like, oh, man, we just talked about conflict. Like, this is somewhat related. But then I think, oh, that's okay. That's a good thing. Because they can be cousins at times, I think.
Well, let's talk about that. I always do a definition.
Yeah, go ahead.
And so the confrontation definition, speaking about confrontation as a noun, is the act of confronting or challenging another, especially face-to-face.
Yeah, challenge, I think, is the key word. When most people hear it, they have a negative connotation of this word, just like they do with conflict. Oh, you confronted someone. You confronted something. That immediately, there's negative psychological feelings and memories attached to that term for most people.
Yes. Yeah, and the feelings part, I think, is memories is a thing. I actually, when I was thinking about, well, where am I going to start with this? I was like, well, where do people start with this? Where do children start with this? And I was like, I look at my children. I watch them sometimes. And one of the things that one of the areas where I think I was weak at as a child and I could have used more guidance was in how to deal with confrontation.
Oh, look at Dave just throwing his parents under the bus. He never confronted them with their lack of confrontational training.
Well, and I think about a child's natural tendencies. And I think a child naturally tends to go to one of the extremes on how to handle confrontation. And the extremes that I put, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, were fear or shyness, so they avoid, mm-hmm. or aggression or violence.
Yeah, fight or flight. And yep. Then there's also freeze people. Yep. So those tend to be the three biological behavioral responses to a confrontational situation. So you're right. I agree with you.
Both of those are pretty ineffective when it comes to today's social.
In our society, yeah.
Yeah. So if we're talking about
the fear one or the runaway one, that's useful in terms of why we're here today.
Yeah. So if you're talking about a violent confrontation, then these are useful, right? Mm-hmm. So the kid's situation, you got to do one of those. If we're talking about an uncomfortable social confrontation,
which is where most of life is for us,
then both of these are pretty ineffective.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I feel like children default to those because that's human nature. And so then that presents a teaching opportunity. When I witness that, and I think most parents do step in, right? That they see their child hit another child, they step in. They see their child get hit and not do anything or take it or walk away or something, or they see a situation where another kid takes something from them, whatever, they're being dominated and they back away, they don't do anything about it, right? Or there's an argument or they want something and they don't speak up. You know, there's a million examples.
Yeah, those are great examples. And I like you started with family. So the context of the confrontation is very important. Who am I confronting, which is what you're focusing on right now? Okay, confronting our children. And so you can do that in different ways. And you probably do it differently if it's in your house, a private setting, versus if it occurs in a department store or at the basketball court publicly.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. And I'm actually, in this instance, putting the confrontation on their side. So I'm saying that they are confronting another child And I'm stepping in and with guidance. So I guess there's confrontation.
Yeah,
both.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's two layers of confrontation. And I think that's a good one. There's other layers of who you're confronting. So there's the internal part of by confronting somebody and doing something, you might be confronting a fear you have internally. So, oh, I'm really nervous to say something to this person. My neighbor, he always plays the loud music late at night and it keeps me up. Should I confront him? Well, by confronting him, you're also confronting your fear of that conversation. So there's really two things going on at once when you choose to confront someone, and it's a rational choice and you've kind of thought it through. Not all confrontations are well thought through. Many aren't. And those are usually the ones that the media loves to shove in our face, because that gets eyes on screens and butts in seats. When there's conflict involved with confrontation and emotions come shooting out, those are the ones we watch. And so I think that poisons us that, oh, confrontation's negative. I fucking love confrontation. I absolutely love it. And I truly believe that I excel at this, and I've become an artist with confrontation. I love thinking 10 steps ahead for how can I confront someone about something in a way that gives them value and respect, but so that this issue gets solved and talked about in a dialogue instead of me just hammering them.
So, yeah, you thrive on confrontation. We talked about this a little bit. When we were talking about conflict, we touched on this a little bit. And we talked about your desire to make people agree and where it stems from.
Help people
agree. Yeah. Help people agree, yes. But for confrontation, like, and if I'm thinking about it from the perspective of a child, they're either going to back down and not get what they want out of the situation, out of fear or shyness, or if they – you know, they're probably not a skilled negotiator at this point.
Right.
So if they don't back down and they still want whatever this is, then that's where the aggression probably comes in, right? Like my son, he'll just take it or hit or something like that. So if I want them to become, if I want them to thrive on confrontation, do you think that there's a way that you can teach them, that you can step in and guide? Do you think that's something that's innate that they just need to have within them?
I mean, I could give you a real specific example that just occurred yesterday with you and Marin. And maybe I didn't see this right because I was kind of in the back, but she was up at the ice cream thing and, you know, what do I want to order basically? And then she knew what she wanted and I think she was asking you to order for her. And then you're like, well, no, Marin, you can order. And she's like, no, Dad, you. And then I quit paying attention, so I don't know who ordered. To me, that's an opportunity right then for you to coach her to confront her fear of not ordering.
I did.
Yeah. And again, I didn't know how it played out. But to me, that's the choices. And so yeah. you clearly made the right one. Yep. That's the small, low-risk opportunities that parents have to help their kids confront their fears by excelling in those small social interactions.
So that's,
and it's hard because there's a million of them,
so,
and you got to be vigilant as a parent.
I see adults that have the same problem.
Well, of course they do.
And I think she's like me in a way, right? And so I think about the way that I would have been when I was little. One of the things that was hard for me was I would know what I want, and I could see that this was probably what was going on in her little head. She knew exactly what she wanted. She didn't know exactly the best words to choose to communicate it. And so she knows that I'm good at that for her. I'm good at extracting what she wants out of her and relaying it to a third party. And so she can use me as a crutch. And she was attempting to in this situation. And so I had her tell me what she wanted.
Nice.
And I don't exactly remember what she said. And then I clarified it. I said, okay, so you want 2 scoops in a bowl, 1 chocolate, 1 strawberry. And she said, yes, that's what I want. And I said, okay, well, tell the nice one.
Nice, there you go.
And she turned around and
perfect.
Said, I want
2 scoops
in a bowl.
So I'd do it similarly. The only thing I'd do different, and this is just because I'm a weirdo. I'm not saying you should do it this way. My background is in communication. I love these little situations. I don't think of it as we're ordering ice cream. I think of it is an opportunity to give my kid 10 bucks before we walk in and say, okay, you're in charge of this transaction. Remember, you've got to figure out your order, give it to the lady, give her the money, and get the correct change. And so I prime them before we get in there, and then they have to own that whole situation when they're in the shop, which is no big deal to me. It's like we're in a shop. it's a new experience. Like, it's like you're in control of this little scenario, but you got to prime, or I prime my kids before, not Ben, he's four. He'll just throw fucking ice cream on the wall. But Claudia, who just turned 8 yesterday, I prime him. And then so she's in there and she's the little consumer. And I'm like, I won't give her any information at that point after I've primed.
I like that.
Yeah.
Okay. And,
but it's fun for me to do that too.
No, that's totally fun. Yeah. Yeah. And so I think I'm probably in that transitional phase right now. Marin is now getting to the point where she can
articulate
that.
Exactly. But it's what we're doing there is helping them confront fear, the internal fear. And the more I think we do that, the more confidence they have in themselves. Oh, belief. I can, these adults, even though I don't know them, wow, they'll listen to me when I say, this is what I want. Here's my money. That builds confidence.
Yep.
Yeah. Whereas if people treat their children like children, no responsibility, no ability to figure things out on their own, that carries into adulthood. And that's why we have so many problems with effective confrontation in the workplace, I think, because parents did a shitty job with their kids growing up.
It's so true. You know, those transactional moments, ordering at a restaurant, I think that's a really perfect example of learning to communicate your wants and desires, right, in exchange for something, and whether or not you're happy at the end. And all these things come into play, right? Like your expectations, what you envisioned the end of the transaction being like versus what the end result was, right? Did I choose correctly, right? And if I didn't, or if I was given a suggestion because what I wanted wasn't available exactly, am I happy with the way that I handled that curveball?
Right.
Because that's one of the things that happened to Marin in this simple ice cream situation. Marin said exactly the right thing, and the young girl behind the counter, you know, not – She could probably, you know, she hasn't worked with kids very much. I'll just say that. Because her response to Marin was, well, we don't have regular chocolate. We have Gold Coast chocolate and we have some other, I don't even know, you know. And so that's Marin then I could see was just like, oh, a little bit overwhelmed.
It's over my head.
Yeah. I told you I want chocolate and strawberry in a bowl. Make it happen, please. Mm-hmm.
Nice.
And so then obviously it was like, all right.
Just pick one.
Yeah, just pick one. And I told Marin, that's the Gold Coast. That's the other one. Which one? And then she picked
it. Yeah, that's on that person not knowing how to do their job effectively.
But I see young adults, not even young adults. I see adults that can't handle that, that can't handle the spontaneity of the situation when what they went in, what their expectations were.
Well, that's neuroticism. That's overanalysis of every small scenario, and it's rampant, and it's more rampant in larger cities probably because there's just more people on top of each other.
Yeah.
You often associate that with New York.
Yeah. Well, Seinfeld did a great job.
Of course, yeah. They built that into their whole show.
Of putting that into play, like the soup Nazi.
Right.
You
have to know how to order.
The confrontation, right?
Yeah, it's all confrontation.
That is a great example of confrontation. So if anyone doesn't know what we're talking about, and you can get your hands...
It's on YouTube, I'm sure.
On Seinfeld and watch the episode about the soup Nazi. It's all about confrontation.
And avoiding confrontation to be cut off from the reward
you
want.
You know what the consequence is.
Well, confrontation is an antecedent or a priori to conflict.
Yes.
Like there's always got to be some kind of confrontation before conflict, even if it's like the second before the disagreement arises, there's got to be a confrontation.
So I love the soup Nazi example. I think we were leading up to it, talking about it with kids ordering ice cream. Can we break it down? You're an expert at this. So let's break it down. Everyone's afraid. Everyone wants the end result, right? So they know what they want. This place has the best soup in the city, right? So they want their bowl of soup at the end. And maybe a piece of bread or whatever. There are different soups. There are different breads. And they look at the menu ahead of time so that they know what they want, right? But there is a protocol.
It's a process. It's
a very strict protocol the soup.
Nazi is what they call him.
Yeah. There's a very strict protocol that he demands or.
No soup for you. That's his saying. And so, yeah, it's all about result. But to focus on the result of getting the wonderful bowl of soup that people stand in line around the block for, it's all about focusing on the process. What is the process and learning the expectations for the process and then fulfilling them. And then in the episode, they do a good job of showing the characters going through it, and some of them are fulfilling it, and it's very robotic and mechanical, which is what makes it funny. And then Elaine comes in and is just like willy-nilly, acting like it's just normal, and she gets screamed, "No suit for you!" Yes. And so it gives the juxtaposition of the two. But it's all about follow the process to get the reward. But if you don't follow the process, you're going to be confronted and then kicked out.
Right, right. And he confronts her. He doesn't just say it immediately. He confronts her, and she just is all nonchalant in her response. She doesn't realize
she didn't respect the
gravity.
Process
of the situation.
That's right.
So then the clash results in the result that she doesn't want. Yeah. So I think that's a really great example of conflict, right? You're trying to – it's often in a negotiable – in a situation where you're doing some negotiating of some kind or transaction.
I believe – yes. So you're correct. At the heart of to confront or not to confront is opportunity cost. That everything about confrontation is about choice and opportunity cost. If I choose to confront at an adult level, kids are still learning a little different. What do I get by confronting and how I confront? What do I give up? It's all about what are the optionality I'm giving myself by doing this. And that's why people choose to live with their fears by not asking their neighbor to mow his lawn that's 12 inches tall, or not asking the person in the workplace who might say things a little inappropriately, just talk to them directly. We choose not to confront, and we avoid by then going to another party or just owning it and then having negative internal emotions.
So I think that last thing you said hits the nail on the head. Most people weigh, and is this the right way to do it? They weigh. Ugh, seeing that grass 12 inches tall gives me some negative emotions. But if I had to actually walk over and knock on the door and confront them about it, that would be higher negative emotions.
Yes. Yeah, so they're weighing it, and it's probably quick. Most people aren't like you and do a T-chart, a pro-con chart. So this occurred. This is a specific thing. Like, these are the things I like to do. So at our old house in the city, there was one neighbor who rented, didn't own. His yard just looked like shit all the time, and everybody talked about it. How do I know this? Because I sat on the neighborhood board, and a lot of people brought it up, and it was a problem, and they never attended the neighborhood meetings.
And so knowing you definitely did not confront this
person. Right, but I knew that I can't go to this guy, knock on his door, he's got some kids, and be like, dude, cut your grass. Like, that's just not going to go well, but I'm also not going to say something, because everyone's upset about it. It just looked bad. So I wrote a letter, and I put it on their door, and it was very nice. I don't want to act like I remember the exact verbiage, but there was no attacking. It was just like, hey, man, look, you know, if you need help with the lawn, I have a lawnmower you can borrow, et cetera, et cetera. I signed my name. I let him know who put it up there. Guess what? He cut his fucking lawn from then on, moving forward. And it's just like, you know, what's the worst that can happen? He, screw you, I'm not cutting my grass. Okay, cool. When you're not here, I'm going to cut it. And I would have, because it was a small little city lawn, at least the front. But I didn't have to. But people are scared of those things, having those small confrontations. And I try to treat them with dignity in the letter. Like, I get it. You got kids. It seems like you work shift work. So I know it's hard. Let us know. Like, people at the meeting, they'd like it cut. I can always help you. I'm not trying to be rude. I told him I didn't want to knock on your door because I didn't want this to escalate. That's why I wrote you the letter.
So one of the tactics I've used, if people are saying, oh, I have a problem with that, right? One of the tactics I've used, because I'm not saying that this works all the time. I still have problems with it. But one of the tactics I've used is to say, me and my analytical mind, I'll go, okay, so yeah, every time I come home, I see that the grass is too high. I have negative emotions, right? Knocking on the door and confronting the guy would be worse, or even writing a letter. So, but in my head, I'm like, okay, so which is worse? Ripping off the Band-Aid and having the more negative emotions for a shorter period of time, or over the next year, 2, 3 years, seeing that every day and feeling these low negative emotions, right? And then usually I'm like, damn it, I got to go knock on the guy's door. Something like that.
Right.
But that's me. That's one of the tactics I use to weigh whether I choose to confront.
And that's the right term. It's a tactic. This isn't a universal law that's going to work with everything. It was something I experimented with, and I was comfortable with the negative path that could have emerged from it. The guy wouldn't like me. Okay, I didn't fucking hang out with him anyway. It doesn't bother me. His grass is high. Cool. I'll literally cut your front lawn when you're gone.
Right. And there are much smaller examples of this, right? So let's say the nice girl behind the counter wouldn't have clarified with Marin, and she would have given her the peanut butter chocolate. And we walk away, and Marin eats it, and she says, this isn't chocolate. This is peanut butter. I'm not happy with this, right? So then the question comes, all right, are you willing to confront the woman behind the counter, ask her to make it right, right? Or is, I like peanut butter anyway.
Right. Well, I always just – I'm just going to exactly. Eat it. Yeah. I say to Claudia, what are your options?
Yeah.
Well, I can eat it. Do you like it? Yeah. What's the other option? I take it back and ask for something different. And she always inflects, ask for something different, like she wants my validation. I don't know. Would that be the other option? I never give it to them because that's what she's wanting. Tell me what I should do here. Nope. You've got to figure it out. And the more they have to figure it out for me, the more I make them figure it out and make mistakes and not understand and the communication's going bad, that's the lesson. That's the best lesson.
That is. That's great.
What about when I hear confrontation, I think of three, you'll like this, analytical, three criteria that make up the confrontation. The frequency of a confrontation, the intensity, and the duration.
Those are good.
And so you know people who, they're confrontational attorneys. Those are confrontational people. That's why they go into law, many of them. I think you have to pick and choose your battles. So I can't be constantly confronting folks in my business life or my family life if I want to stay married with every little thing. You know, that's self-righteous and that's not effective in my opinion. But then by not confronting with anything, then you're accommodating everyone all the time. And that's a problem. So again, there's a balance and the balance moves over time, but you need to think about how often should I confront, pick and choose your battles. But then if weirdos like me who are emotional and you get your energy from your emotions, you need to think about your intensity during the confrontation. Dave's more calm. So his natural demeanor during a confrontation will probably feel different than my natural demeanor. Now I can alter my natural intense demeanor by thinking through it beforehand. But if I don't, then it's just, it comes off super passionate and like I'm, so, it's so important. And it might not be, but that's just how I communicate.
One of the things that I had, so talking about intensity, this is good, was listen to your feelings. So we talked about listening to your feelings when you decide whether to confront someone or not. During the confrontation, yes, you have to not just listen to your feelings, but be aware of your feelings and how they're affecting you, how they're affecting your behavior. It's one of the things that, even though I may be more calm, right, learning to reflect on the feelings that I'm having in the moment made me a better listener, which is I think a huge part, and we can get into that later, of confrontation is listening. So even if you initiate a confrontation, you're going to get a message back immediately, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you're having big feelings, you are very intense, right? You're probably influencing the intensity with which the response will be given. And so you have to know that, right? And so as you're walking up, as you're deliberating about what your strategy is for initiating the confrontation, you might be like, okay, so I understand. I want to be calm. I don't want to, you know, piss this guy off. So I'm going to deliver the message in this way. I think it's the lowest intensity way to deliver it, right? And hopefully the response matches my intensity. Probably a higher chance of it matching yours, you know, or of it being low, a low intensity response, than if you go up and just start yelling, for sure. But there's no guarantee that the message that you get back is going to be low intensity. It might be high intensity. That person, right. Who knows what's going on in that person's day, life, mind, whatever their emotions are. And so one of the things that I think is important is trying to do your best to control the intensity on your side. You can't control the intensity on both sides.
Yeah, not at all.
And if you don't listen to your feelings and you just let them drive you through it, that's a good place where you can have confrontations
get in trouble.
Awry.
Yeah,
yeah.
Let's ratchet it up a bit, and I'll share. I'll be vulnerable and share some stuff that's been going on in my life in terms of confrontations that you're aware of. What about when it's with a family member? Now we've been talking about kids and more on like educating our kids on how to adapt and flex the art of confrontation in a positive way. How for people in general to deal with their inner fears and confront those fears by taking those small social steps with other people. What about when it's a family member situation, but it's got higher consequences, ramifications, and impact? What about when someone's been living a lifestyle and it's very difficult lifestyle, and it's putting negative impact on everyone around them, whether it's addiction behaviors or whether it's lack of self-care. So with my dad, he recently was hospitalized for 5 days because he didn't take care of a wound that then got infected quite badly, to the point where we thought they might have to amputate part of his leg. Now, luckily, the story's turned out very positive. We've all, including my dad, been able to turn this obstacle into a blessing and a reward, and it's made us closer, and it's got him set up more effectively in life. However, while we were going through it, my brother and I just learned a lot of things about how Dad was living, and it was very rough. He was making some just difficult choices and adding stressors to his life that no one needs, let alone someone at his age needs. So then we were faced with, how do we confront our dad of 76 years old who's making bad personal decisions, making his life harder? And how do you confront that? What do you say to that? You can't expect 180 change. He's 76. So our strategy was to focus on dignity, that we wanted to try to allow him to have as much dignity through the process. But then we had to keep voicing, as we framed it, here's our concerns, Dad. These are our concerns, that when you move back into your house from Josh's apartment, you need to take your meds. You need to do this. This is what we're concerned with, your financial health. Like, how are we, if everything's for me and Josh, well, that's his end game. It's all for you and your brother. Well, if it's for me and Josh, and you want us to have positive emotional energy, if you don't do these things, that's negative emotional energy, and we're having to take care of these things. So how can we help you achieve these, is how we framed it. And so, again, we don't know how it's going to play out. He's moving back in, like, this week. But in turn, we had to confront that. But we also know our dad. If you confront too direct, it ain't poking the bear. It's setting the bear on fire. Like, he'll lose it, man, with the German stubbornness. Thoughts on
yeah,
that?
The word intervention comes to mind mm-hmm. in this situation. Yeah. And I would say there you talked about planning. You talked about your knowledge of the family member that you are confronting. And I think that this is an example of something where planning is necessary. Mm-hmm. And you have a whole lot more knowledge of the situation and of how the person will or might react from years and years of experience, right? So the planning piece of this is very important. And understanding if the response is this is how I or we especially, because your brother had to be a unified front.
Well, and our wives.
Wives, right? So you had to be a unified front. So planning was very important in this situation. And I would say it's completely different than a situation where you might be trying to negotiate something, maybe even of equal importance, but with someone that you don't know, right? So you could have a life-changing confrontation that needs to be made for something, a living situation or whatever. But if it's with someone that you don't know, you have a lot less information, and you can't include that in your planning. You can only include your side of it in the planning. And so you know your dad. You know his typical response, but you know the range of responses that you can expect. And then you also know the people on your side and the way that they typically would do this. And so you had to think through it very well.
Right.
And talk it out with your people and say, guys, this is the way we're going to do
this. I agree. The only – not disagreement, but the only rub is you can have the greatest plan in the world, but executing it is what matters. And that's the whole – we had – okay, here's our game plan. That's what I kept saying. Here's our game plan. Here's how we're going to do it. If he starts to get upset, here's what we're going to do. But then while we're in the apartment – and again, he just had a lot of stuff. He kept stuff. He didn't like to throw stuff away. He thought he'd, you know, get to some – oh, I'll use this someday. And it built up over time a lot. And so he came with us when we went to clean that out. And it was unreal. He did a fantastic job, but towards the end, he started to get a little upset. But now we realize it was because the doctors had him on way too much blood pressure medication, and he was literally lightheaded and not feeling well. But we had this plan. He didn't get upset until the very end. He's just like, where's this one book? I don't remember the book. I don't know. Do you guys not know where this was? I mean, this place was full of stuff. I don't know. So you guys threw it away? Well, I don't know, Dad, but if we did, we'll just tell us the title. We'll literally buy it. We can have it tomorrow for Amazon. And he starts to get upset, you know, and hone in on that emotional. And it was probably just an exemplar of the whole process that was going on.
Sure.
But man, like having our plan versus executing it in that moment was difficult. And all we did was just silence. We just didn't say anything because that was the only way we were going to be able to deal with it. And then he eventually let it go. But, you know, he was in certain comments there for a while. Just, you know, it's okay. Just throw away all my memories, just my whole life. Just throw it down the tubes. It's not important. I get it. No big deal.
Yeah.
Like, that's tough coming hearing your dad say that.
Yeah, no, that would be. And I think that's another skill. It's like when there is a breakdown. So whether it's in this situation or it's in the situation where you, Claudia, came up with the list of possibilities, right? So what are my choices? I can do this or this, right? Well, inevitably, it doesn't matter how well you plan, there will be something that is unaccounted for that throws itself into the situation. And one of the skills is how do I handle, you know, spontaneity in the situation where I didn't plan for this. And that actually planning for that, it becomes a skill, right?
Right.
Like, what do I default to, right?
Here,
it's like I'll make a sports analogy. It's like when a play breaks down. You come in, you're like, this is the play we're going to run, right? And everything with that play goes wrong. And now you're just playing the game. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, well, now I'm down to my base level of skill. You know what I mean? What do I do?
You just do.
In the moment, right?
Yep.
That's a skill, man.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, another thing that popped up, the Bible. And it's funny. So my dad's Catholic, uber old school Catholic. Catholics don't read the Bible. So he's like, where's the Bible? Do you know where the Bible is? We're like, I don't. It's probably in a box because we weren't just throwing books away. We kept his books. I'm like, I don't know. But if it by chance got tossed, guess what? We'll get you a brand new one. But he kept bringing it up. So I just went ahead and preemptively ordered him a new Bible. And I got a big one, big print, and the leather bound, really nice. Now I let him know that. Hey, if we don't find yours, guess what? We'll have a new one tomorrow. What kind of Bible did you get? I got the bestseller Bible on Amazon. Is that King James Version? Because I don't read King James Version. I'm a Catholic, Zach. I read, say, Joseph's Version. And he started to get fairly aggressive with me. And this is over the phone. Dad, I'm 38 years old. You know how many times I've seen you read the Bible? Fucking zero. And then I finally started to push. And I didn't say the F word, but... And then he, you know, pushed back. Well, it just started to go. And I shut up, Zach. He wants the Bible. It's about the emotional connection here. There's probably some sentimentality attached to this Bible I don't know about. So I just said, Dad, if we can't find the Bible, I apologize. We did our best. We'll get you a St. Joseph's Bible. And I happened to be heading to his apartment. This was last week. And I just said, screw it. And I stopped at the shrine because I was on Highway 15. And I bought him the St. Joseph's Bible he wanted. So that when he showed up, it was sitting there. And he liked that. But, dude, I can only be non-confrontational for so much because I am my dad. Like, you poke me enough, I'm gonna fight back. Yeah. And I started to on that call. But then I was just like, dude, and then what was it? This was a Bible that was given to me and your mom when we got married. So it's clearly a memory from the remnant of the happy times of their marriage,
right?
You know, and this is shit I didn't know.
Right.
I'd never seen him. I don't even know this Bible.
Right.
So it's just, for me, the opportunity cost was I got to push back, but then pull back is, let him know, Dad, we're doing our best here, bud.
Yeah.
You gave us a difficult situation to work with.
Well, and knowing yourself is part of that skill. So we're talking about a play breaking down here.
Yeah, 100%.
And so then knowing yourself and your set of skills, your tendencies, your strengths, and your weaknesses is important.
He started being like, well, who did you talk to at Amazon? Well, what do you mean, Dad? I'm like, do you not know how Amazon works? And, well, no, I don't. Sorry, I'm not good with technology. Dad, I get on and I type, like, so that, like, and then I'm like, this isn't going well. I apologize. We'll get you the right Bible. Let's just not fight about this, please.
Yeah.
And then I was silent and then we were cool.
Right. I love it.
But those are the meaningful things. Those are the confrontations that matter. You can do the same thing in the workplace. I just had an email come across that was very ambiguous from a prospect. I prospected her. It went great. She's the owner of the company. She just hired a director of operations. Tanya is going to take over from here. Have a great conversation. Okay. Well, what background info have you given from Tanya? Tanya was totally clueless. So then I had to loop the boss back in, copy that person, which might have made that person feel dumb, like she wasn't able to handle it. I had to figure out, how do I deal with this small conf? Do I confront or do I just be like, well, Tanya, what's up? Do you want to try to figure this out? I would have lost the sale.
Yeah.
So those are the opportunities.
Yeah. So what did you do in that situation?
I crafted a really – I was thoughtful. I'm like, how can I make this clear so that we're all on the same page? They're both looped in without making the new person feel like I'm saying you don't know what's going on, but at the same time not making the CEO feel like you didn't provide enough context and information to help your new hire do her job effectively.
Right.
That was the art.
Right.
So then it was just like – hey, you know, we'll call it Tanya and Tracy. Tanya is the new person. I was like, hey, Tanya, really look forward to our meeting. I went ahead and copied Tracy in here only because I want to make sure I'm prepared for this meeting. I'm not sure what background you gave Tanya on this. Does she know what we discussed? Because I want to hone in on the pain points that we got through. What should I know for our upcoming conversation? So I framed it on, I'm dumb, help me understand. Oh, yeah, sorry, I just told her to go fix this. Talk about, catch her up on what we discussed. Provide her with any information and the economics, and then, yeah, she'll be the one making the decision.
Man, just thinking about everything that goes into the consideration when
right.
crafting a message like that, when choosing to send an email versus making a phone call, when choosing what to communicate in the message based on the medium and the context,
right.
Based on the relationship that you have, not only with the boss, but now with a new person,
right?
Right. All of these considerations have to go into your decision
right.
of how to do this conversation.
If you want to do it well. And that's the strategy side.
Art, right?
Yeah. Well, that's the strategy side.
Right?
To me, yeah. the art is working the strategy. The strategy is in the planning,
yes.
thinking through all that,
yes.
getting strategic.
Choose
what are the variables?
Yes.
Okay. But now then when I communicate it and the obstacles that pop up, I've got to be able to be flexible
right.
in the moment. To me, that's where the art comes from. But if you do strategy enough, you should be able to get artful.
Exactly.
But now you mentioned a great point.
It's like
I prefer calls real quick. The call's better, but because I had two different people, I had to send the email to keep them looped in. So that's why I chose an email.
No, that's perfect. That's
yeah.
perfect. What I think it is a bit like is I think it's a bit like what's the comedy where you just play like there's a situation and the folks are on stage, but after that
improv.
So it's you have to improv, right?
Yeah.
So you can plan the situation and you can plan all the variables, but once you hit play.
It's going.
Who knows what's
right.
going to happen,
yeah.
right? Like,
but that's,
lots of many,
yeah.
many things.
So there's a term called extemporaneous speaking. It's a type of speaking people do. And the people that do it best are stand-up comedians, improv professionals, and successful plaintiff attorneys who argue before juries and successful defense attorneys. But all that means is you absolutely have a set plan, strategy, and process that you know very well for how you want to do something, how you're going to confront evidence, how you're going to confront the person, how you're going to confront the audience if you're a comedian. But then once it gets going, as you said, press play, you just have to be able to go with the flow. You have to be able to say the same thing in 10 different ways using 10 different tones and different timing and pace, but the same message needs to be delivered. Those folks are really skilled in their professional settings at confronting ideas in other people.
Man, that's absolutely true.
Because with confrontation, a real master is – it's all about timing. Timing. The timing of the confrontation. Who are you confronting them in front of?
Something that's coming to my mind, right? Because I'm thinking about someone who's listening to this and they're just saying, gosh, I'm just not good at this. I'm not a plaintiff attorney by far. I've done improv a couple times and I was awful at it. I'm a million miles away. I'm never going to be good at this. Well, you know what that makes me think about? It makes me think about, we talked about at the beginning, the difference between conflict and confrontation, watching children have social confrontation, and how that probably makes up 95%+ of the confrontation that you're going to experience throughout the course of your life. I can think of, and it's almost like the most common confrontational situations that adults deal with all the time. Each one of those offers its own opportunity to be good at that confrontation. So, for example, that plaintiff attorney might be awesome in the courtroom. They might be awesome at extemporaneous speaking mm-hmm. in the confines of that situation, but then they got to confront their family member
right.
about some problem that's going on, and they
do it like an attorney. They do it like an attorney.
Strategy, and
yeah.
it is terrible.
Bad.
It goes awful.
We have a very close person, a friend of mine, whose father is a quite famous attorney, and he's like, "You just don't argue at the house because Dad's never wrong. He never allows anyone. In 38 years, Dad has won every argument in the house, and it doesn't make for a happy house.
And so what I'd say is, you know, don't look at every situation differently and give yourself the opportunity to improve in those situations. Yeah. And then you will build a baseline skill set that is universal because you'll just naturally recognize, okay, one of the things I have to do is I have to realize the feelings I'm feeling, hold them down for a little bit, and don't let them drive the way that I immediately react in the moment. That generally helps things out, right? You'll develop a base set of skills. But I mean, ordering at a restaurant and having something go wrong, gonna happen all the time, right? Trying to make a big purchase, right? Especially like car dealers. That's a perfect confrontational situation. Anything dealing with legal matters, right?
Or anything dealing with where you're dealing with any subject matter expert who's trying to provide you advice. Those are ripe for confrontational moments. That you've hired them. They're in your employ. Just because they're recommending something doesn't mean you have to take action on it. You can confront, you can ask questions, you can ask for options. You can say, I'm simply looking for information. I will take this information and go make a decision on my own. I'd like to hear your recommendation and why you're recommending that. But people don't do that. They tend to get with a subject matter expert that's providing business service. What should I do? Okay, I'll do that. And that's not good. They don't want to confront their lack of knowledge, basically.
Yeah, yeah. And when you put all these things together, right, you say, okay, whatever, this sounds like a lot of work. But when you put all these things together and you realize that the better that you get at these things, the better you get at expressing yourself, what your desires are, what you're willing to give up, it'll make your life easier. You will have an easier life. There are people who stick with the fear and shyness part too much that they had as a child from a child and they've just never gotten over, and they just accept suboptimal things all the time, and they're not, you know, their expectations are often not met, and that's just their normal. They're used to being disappointed and not getting what they want, right? And then you got the flip side. You got that guy who argues all the time at a house and makes everyone feel terrible, yep. Right? And so this is a skill that is
– it's a huge skill.
Core. Yeah.
It's core. Being skilled at confrontation is oil to the squeaks of life. It just makes interacting with other humans easier because, again, you don't have to – we're not saying you need to confront every single thing going on. Pick and choose your battles. Think about your intensity, your tone, your timing. Those are all important things. But Dave mentioned something about purchasing. And in his definition, he talked about challenged, feeling challenged or being challenged. Challenging the status quo by asking for something is confrontation in and of itself. By my daughter saying, can I spend my 50 cents to purchase the bag of Cheetos at Taekwondo, which she knows that I absolutely hate, that's a confrontation. She's choosing to say, my status quo is no. No is default in life. Not having is default. I'm going to challenge this and confront my dad's framework of my Taekwondo teacher. He shouldn't be selling this shit at Taekwondo. And so she'll ask. So for me, those little asks are ways to build your skill of confrontation. Absolutely. And while I don't like it, I admire it as a dad.
No, I love that. That's great. Because she's trying to change her status quo to yes.
Exactly.
I eat Cheetos at Taekwondo.
Exactly.
And it's going to be on dad yep. to say no.
Well, and then I've used the C word, confrontation. I said, look, if you keep asking this, the confrontation won't be between me and you. It'll be between me and Master Winkler. Because then I will confront him and say, I think it's wrong to be selling sugar and salt at Taekwondo. Because now you've created a reward in my kid's head that, ooh, I can get this snack when I'm done. And that is antithetical to everything you're doing. And if you don't want me to do that, Claudia, you probably should stop asking to buy the stuff.
That's good. That's good. I like that. Very good. What about advanced? Claudia's going to be advanced.
What about alcohol? How does alcohol play in to the art of confrontation? Alcohol has been a lubricant in a positive way for confrontation and in a negative way.
Can I throw one more thing in before we go?
Yeah.
Because holy cow, we're going to talk about that for a long time. The last thing I wanted to say was in those situations, there are unspoken rules that for some reason people abide by. you just said, like, Claudia realized that she's got to challenge the status quo to ask if she wants her Cheetos. Mm-hmm. Think about the status quo when it comes to any retail negotiation, yeah. right? Like, for some reason, people see the context and they let it shape their behavior by making assumptions that may or may not be true. So I'll see people on vacation, right? I remember this all the time when we would be, like, on a vacation at a beach place, usually out of the U.S., like Jamaica or whatever, negotiating with every little vendor that they could possibly negotiate with because they thought it was, this is the way it's done. This is, I have to win and I have to feel good about this purchase. Yes, it's a worthless carved wooden cup purchase, but if I got it for $1 less, it makes me feel better. Mm-hmm. Or one of our friends, after we would come out of the bars, and we'll tie this to alcohol, would from the street vendors that were selling burritos, breakfast burritos on the street at 2 a.m. after everyone's been drinking, he would just brag about his ability to get the burrito for $1 cheaper
nice.
Than
who?
Whatever.
Who?
Brett. Brett.
Bender?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm bringing that up next yeah. week. Yeah. I'll see him next week.
Yep. And so he was just a master of
negotiating. I love negotiating that. I love that. No, and, that's great.
And would like, we'd compare notes. You know what I mean? We'd come out, get some burritos. I got it from this one. I got X amount off. It made him feel good. Bottom line is, you go into a regular retail store in the U.S., right? Who knows? Maybe you can negotiate, but people assume they can't.
No, you can. And I'm pointing to why. You have a phone in your hand, and they don't want to lose business. But everyone, oh, well, here's the price. Look, the price is written right here on the shelf.
Right.
This is what I have to pay.
Right.
And that's what most people do, but you don't have to.
Exactly. And, well, that would be an extra level of confrontation.
Right, of course.
I don't want to.
It's an extra step.
The thing right? on the price.
Yeah, Think about it. All that is big box stores are a market. Just like Amazon, just like in the Middle East or a flea market. They're markets. And we've extracted the humanity of the bartering and the negotiation process. There's humanity in that. There's a connection when you're going back and forth trying to find the value or price of something. And we've just said, oh, this large group of humans over here has figured it out and they've told us what it is. So I accept that they're omnipotent and they know it.
Exactly. Exactly. It's the art of getting what you want.
Right.
It's the art of understanding that whatever rules you're even told or you're assuming, those can bend. I can even think of a situation. Let's say you're in a big box store, just like you said. Let's say you're in a Lowe's or something, right? And you're like, look, I really want that, but I think that it's only worth X. You know, I'll pay that for it, you know? And what's the canned response going to be? Well, I'm not authorized
right,
to make
yeah.
that, you know?
Well, and that comes in who you're confronting is
exactly.
part of the
strategy. Well, and then the question becomes, well, then who can I talk to yeah. to make that happen, right? But people don't do that for the most part.
Well, people are not lazy. They've just got a lot of stuff going on. Yeah. So they don't want friction. To them, that's an extra friction in their life.
And the reason I'm even bringing it up is because I think this is one of those things that it's a consideration for two things. Number one, improv in the moment. If you find yourself in a situation where you're now off the cuff, you're out of the what you thought was the structure of the situation, the confrontation, what do you do? How do you handle it, right? And number two, planning, right? So think about, what do I want out of this situation and how badly do I want it? Because that's what you're saying, right?
Yeah.
People don't have time. They're busy. They just want to – it's just that they don't want it that bad.
They don't want it that bad. Well, they don't even know what they don't want.
Well, that's a good one. Yeah. Yeah,
you know, I mean,
exactly. It's either.
But the flip side is, though, people that sometimes do that bartering and the negotiating, usually they're either skilled at that, so they want to flex the skill, or that's just they're hardwired that way. They enjoy it. Like, I get a positive emotional energy by having those exchanges with folks. Plenty of other people don't get that. And
yeah.
we can't act like all, even if they practice it and choose to confront, they're all of a sudden their brain's going to get rewired to get serotonin from it, because it's not. It won't.
Well, this is so good because we're getting into the mechanics of it, and there's the question of resources and what you're willing – when you talked about what do I want and what am I willing to give up, mm-hmm. right?
What do I get and
yeah.
what am I willing to give up?
What do I get and what am I willing to give up? In these situations – where someone just does it because it's what they enjoy to do, I think you're taught what you're saying is true. But sometimes people have a lack of resources, and they don't realize that they can still maybe get what they want with those limited resources if they
– by having a strategy
exactly.
and a plan. That's the whole piece with the strategy and planning part for confrontation, negotiation, conflict management. It's even more important if you don't have knowledge, skills, time, and energy –
Because if you have those things, then yeah, whatever. I might not get this, but I'll eventually get something else elsewhere. But if you don't have those things, that's where the grind of going through the planning process is most important. And it's really important for young people. That's why I loved teaching negotiation and conflict management in college, because these kids, they just be like, wow, you can negotiate all kinds of different. You can't negotiate everything, and that's a trite, cliche piece of conventional wisdom. But you can negotiate a lot more things.
You're absolutely right. And we'll move on. But
yeah, I like that.
The last thing I want is, it's almost unlimited the context that goes into these things. Because I think about
it, yeah, it is.
It's like in Office Space when he's like, oh, yeah, we find that it's best to fire people on a Friday.
On a Friday.
Right? So you have to think about the timing.
Timing
right?
is key.
You have to think about what is going on in the other person's life. How are they? All the information that you can get gives you an edge. I'm going to go buy a car at the end of the month because I know they have to meet their sales quotas. And if I especially know that this dealership has had a rough time lately, or this sales guy is going to be in a situation where he needs to make this sale. Now I've even got a little. There's just the context that goes into it is amazing. Going to the beginning of the month, he doesn't need the sale. You have limited resources. All right, take a walk. At the end of the month, well, maybe it's a different story. So understanding every piece of information you can about the confirmation can give you, or about the confrontation can give you an edge. All right,
and it just depends on how much time you want to put in. Exactly. Well, one other thing I'll share about myself. I learned pretty young when to confront my mom for the ask. And it was through trial and error that eventually became enlightened trial and error. And it was after her after meal cigarette. Not before the cigarette, not before the meal. After the meal, she's come home dealing with me and my insane brother, tearing the house up. Not after the meal. After the cigarette, it was almost a yes every time. And what I remember when that went off, I was like, oh my God, and basically it was always riding over to the Ponders from riding across town very young. And I'm pretty sure Claudia has figured this out with me. It is never ask, because I read a lot. Never ask Dad when he's reading. I just give him this look. And they know to just walk away. But it's like when I'm done and I pop up, then I usually try to be goofy. That's when I get a lot of asks. Now, I don't know if she's done that strategically, but then I was just like, I wonder if she figured that out too. Maybe she did, or maybe it's just luck. But well, either way,
even,
it works.
Maybe not even consciously.
Knowing it. Yeah, true. Right. So that I thought that was funny. Alcohol.
All right, let's do it.
What a blessing to the human species and a curse at the same time. It's both. It's not either or. Think of what it's done for people to allow them to confront.
It lowers on the positive things.
Yeah.
Right? That negative feeling.
So many humans are born from alcohol that we wouldn't have so many people on this planet, many that we can name in our friend circle, themselves and their kids.
Relationships are built, started.
100%, because you got the gumption to confront your inner fear and go talk to the girl or go talk to the guy or whoever.
Yeah.
It can be just such a positive thing.
Yeah. I would say, you know what? Even probably, especially when it comes to men, more friend relationships with other males are
great.
Probably
excellent,
built.
Excellent point.
Started and built.
You can be more vulnerable. You can, again, confront that inner fear, disclose and share things or reveal things you might not feel comfortable doing sober. Yep. You build that bond and that trust.
Exactly.
But alcohol can absolutely go the other way with confrontation.
Oh.
Especially, and not even just for folks like me who have issues with that substance, but just people who don't use it, effectively, I guess. You go overboard.
So, yeah. So let's talk about this. It's the old slippery slope argument, is it not? And so the question becomes, is alcohol a tool? Is it actually a tool? Because
it alters your perception of reality. That's a tool, and if you can use the tool correctly, great.
Or is it a crutch?
I don't think it has to be either or. I think it's both and.
Okay.
You're not an alcoholic. I'm a recovering alcoholic. You have a negative body reaction to alcohol now. That's probably tied to your physical health and now your mental health. We have plenty of other friends who use it pretty responsibly, and they enjoy the concert more because they're drinking during it. You know, like, to me, it's a tool, but it can be a crutch too.
Okay.
I don't think it has to be one label. Why does it have to be one label?
No, I get what you're saying. I get what you're saying. I question where the negative impact begins, right? So obviously it's like, oh, in social situations, if I'm going out, you know, and I'm at a business conference and it's after and we're at a networking mingle, whatever, of course I'll have a drink or two, you know, it greases the social, you know,
Makes it easier. Yeah. Alcohol makes meeting people easier.
Okay, fine. Seems harmless. Probably is harmless, right? On the flip side, like, oh man, I've got to confront a client about this and I don't feel good negotiating the conversation. But I could probably just have one drink before that.
Yeah, that then has become the crutch.
And then it's like, well, wait a minute. You're talking about doing this in the middle of a business day? Like,
right.
Just so you can have a conversation?
Right.
Yeah. Is it so?
But that line, there is no line. That's what the medical profession wants to draw a line and be like, if you've had this many drinks, then you're probably.
At this time of day.
Any alcoholic knows that there's no line. Everyone has their own line. Like, right. It depends. Right?
Yeah.
I would say if, on average, if somebody's having to take a drink at 10 in the morning with the result of I don't feel confident enough to go have this confrontation with someone, yeah, that's probably not a good thing. That's a crutch at that point, you know?
Yeah.
But if you're having some drinks at night and you're because it allows you to loosen up a little, you know, if you're not drinking, driving around hammered or it's not causing you major negative issues or hangovers, well, then you're probably using it correctly.
So funny because it is used in business.
Oh, 100%.
Hey, man, you know what? Let's do this over a beer.
Yeah. Well, right?
Let's go to happy
hour. The whole
hour.
Idea yeah. of happy hour.
Yeah.
The whole idea of how many industries used to be centered around alcohol, the holiday party, putting bars in at company headquarters, it loosens people up.
Yeah.
But now we're getting away from that as a society, and I don't even know if that's necessarily good because we're so litigious.
It's true. We actually had I did a virtual happy hour.
Oh, yeah, those are hugely
just
popular right
Thursday
now.
Thursday night, and on this new software platform, that was very cool. So I think one of the problems with like most happy hours now is you don't get to interact as a person where you can choose who you walk up to and talk to, what group you go stand in, all that stuff. So this software made you able to do that virtually. It was pretty cool. It was a pretty cool thing.
Hmm.
So, side note. Anyway, so back to alcohol and greasing the skids. So that's the – all right, now we're on the positive side of alcohol, right? We're on the using it as a tool side of when it comes to confrontation. What are you doing? You're lowering the – barrier to entry. You're lowering the negative emotion.
You're choosing to overlook your fears.
Yes. So I definitely know that's its most positive
thing,
is it lowers inhibition to initiate confrontation. Right?
Right.
Is it useful after the initial initiation, or is it a detriment only to all the other areas?
To me, that's an absolute question. And alcohol
can be,
it's a scale, it's a gradient, whatever you want to call it. Somebody can sit at for over a 5 hour, that'd be a long happy hour, over a 2 hour happy hour and have six drinks, let's say, and they could have a great time, not necessarily feel like they're the life of the party. Maybe they think they're, but they're contributing to it and everyone's enjoying and everyone goes home happy. And they finally said something to the boss that they've been wanting to say, and it seemed to go over really well. You put the person next to them having six drinks, they're going to the bathroom and throwing up. They're driving home drunk. It just depends on the person.
Right. Yeah. No, that makes sense. I also think it depends on the confrontation.
Well, 100%. How serious is it? What's the ramifications of it? Is there legal involved? Is this a formal grievance? Are we trying to prevent those things by having the confrontation in the first place?
Yeah. Is it super nuanced? Mm-hmm. Am I going to have to do the improvisation, the extemporaneous thing?
Which alcohol can help with.
Yeah, it can help and it can dull.
And it can hinder.
Yeah.
So it really, to me, alcohol eventually started to really hurt the intensity. When Hyde came out from my counter ego or alter ego, it was just all the horrible things inside me. And
meaning it ramped up your intensity.
Yeah.
Which I think it generally does for anyone.
Right. Right. But and that's where's that line at for people? Like, you want to enjoy the emotions and feel the emotions, but not at the degree where it costs you reputation or relationships or money or life.
Yeah.
At the very worst.
Well, it's funny because what people who would tend to use alcohol as a crutch would naturally be inhibited, right? So they would probably be of lower intensity at baseline than they desire. And so Now all of a sudden with alcohol, it almost flips the switch on the intensity, right? Where drunk people have no problem. They don't have an awareness of the fact that they are now impeding on another person. Right.
Their radar is down. Their sensitivity radar is down.
Exactly, right? Yeah. So their intensity goes too high.
Lack of self-awareness, of volume, of every how you – it's the kitty looking in the mirror seeing the lion. That's it.
Yeah. That's probably the first – like that's probably the first switch over into negative territory. So I can think about this – In social situations all the time. And obviously, like, dealing with you back when you drank a lot, right? Like, there was a very clear line, a very clear switch when you were over it.
The glassy eyes, you'd see it.
Well, at the beginning of you drinking, you would just become a little looser, a little more fun, a little louder, you know, maybe a little more humorous, all the good things. But there was a clear time where you started looking for confrontation.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say is some people with alcohol, it's being planned and prepared for a confrontation is different than actively provoking one or doing the things that one provokes to you, like inviting the provocation.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what I did.
Oh, yeah. That was obviously one of the root problems of you when you would use too much alcohol. That switch would flip, and it was no longer the fun.
Fun was gone.
It was confrontation. I'm going to start confrontation, and I'm going to win confrontation.
Yeah.
And at that point in time, like my whole strategy with that, because I just knew over the years of how it would go, was I have to leave here. I have to leave now. I have to get away from Zach because nothing good is going to come from this.
Nice. You had a smart strategy to avoid confrontation with the guy who was seeking them.
Yeah. Yeah. So what is it about alcohol that makes people, you know, obviously you hear about people who then become violent. Mm-hmm. When drinking, talk about ramping up intensity to the point of violence.
Well, I mean, it just obviously there's all kinds of chemical things going on and how it reacts with different people's bodies. And then clearly with alcoholism and that disease and their bodies process it very differently. And I mean, there's just a lot in that question. So,
okay.
To me, it's just it can be useful with confrontation in a positive way. And then obviously can slide down that slope into being really negative for people as well.
So we've tied alcohol to its positives. We got over to the negative, and I think it mainly on the negative focuses around intensity, right? Lack of awareness, intensity, all that. So is there anything else you want to say about alcohol? Because the other thing, if not, what I would think we could do is say, what about people who have a problem with intensity naturally, like mm-hmm. with no substance problem? What about anger, temper, mm-hmm. right? These people –
well, they confront others because they won't confront themselves.
Ooh, that's interesting.
But yeah. I mean, if you're super angry, you have major self-loathing going on. And there's something in your life that you're unhappy about, the decisions you made or what happened to you, the victim that you feel you were. And so you project all that negative energy onto others. That's the root of anger.
Okay. So let's talk about confronting yourself.
I mean, that's the hardest confrontation to have for people. That's why we're having this at all, because people won't confront themselves and the fears that we and the self-limiting beliefs that guide our behaviors. That's the hardest confrontation to have is the one with yourself.
How do you recognize when that needs to happen?
Well, it's hard. As a human, it needs to happen every day. Mm-hmm. That's it. That's the ideal. Confront. What am I filling my head with? What noise am I exposing myself to? How am I feeling? How am I acting? If I'm off kilter, unbalanced, address it. There's something going on. But we're exposed to so much noise, we don't hear the signal. We don't hear our internal voice, what's going on.
So is confrontation a key element of self-awareness?
With the internal aspect, I would agree for sure.
Yeah. I think self-awareness is probably one of the more important things that I've tried to learn and practice as an adult. I'm still really bad at it and still trying to get better. But is there a tactic?
There's a million tactics that can
play with confrontation, self-confrontation.
I mean, it's all about that radar of you've got first, what are your triggers? You got to know what your triggers are that get the emotions boiling, if you will. So that would be a simple tactic. Figure out, list out, or think through what makes me uncomfortable in a family setting, in a work setting. Is it discussing a certain thing? Is it being around a certain person? I can't put that in your voice, you know. You got to figure that out. So that's a tactic. Then the harder one is, okay, now the trigger happens. Now how do I deal with it? And there's a lot of different things we could discuss there. I mean, we're getting pretty deep. We're at an hour three.
Okay. Well,
but I love that. I mean, to me, if we don't have self-awareness on the list, we should add it. Because at its core, that's Socrates' advice. Know thyself.
Yeah. I know we're getting deep and I know we're far into this. I do think it would be remiss if we didn't talk about, because we've focused on confrontation with others in transactional settings, as interventions, in our social life. But you know, necessarily there is confrontation.
Okay.
In yourself.
So let me give you another tactic to enhance your self-awareness. What is what I asked you earlier today? What did I ask you to do on my behalf?
Pay attention to areas where you could improve.
Where do I suck? Tell me, I want you to pick the one area where I suck. I do this every few years. I reach out to my inner circle of people that I trust and I respect their advice. You don't want to ask these type of questions to people whose advice you don't respect. And then you elicit that, hope that it's honest because you ask the right people, and then you look for the patterns, and then you take changes based on what you see. That's a great way. The best leaders in the world, they solicit advice and feedback from those closest to them, and then they take action on one of those things. So that's a way to enhance your self-awareness.
That's a good one. That's a really good one. I think we'll probably end it there.
Yeah, I mean, so that's what I was asking you to do.
Okay.
For me, Dave.
Okay.
Help me be more self-aware.
Yeah. No, it's utilizing others, right?
Well, yeah.
You got to have a mirror.
Well, it's your network. It's just like, hey, I don't know why more people don't do that. Where am I really strong at and where do you think I suck? Like, we're friends. We're not me and you. We do that all the time.
Well,
but
you
people
know
in
the
general.
Why? You know the answer.
Because
why.
People are scared.
Yes.
Because they won't confront themselves. Because
yes.
They won't deal with their bullshit. That's the whole point.
Yeah. The best feedback that I've ever received as an adult happened years ago, and we've talked about this. Stirred up the most negative emotions in me, and that's when I knew it was good feedback. It was a horrible thing to go
well, share it.
I was told by multiple people that I was a terrible listener, and man,
it was an activity we did.
Yeah, it was a great activity. It was
a coaching activity. You have people close to someone that they interact with a lot. Categorize the top 3 to 5 problematic communication areas, and then you look for patterns. So if there's no pattern that emerges, then it's like, you're probably okay, because then people are just perceiving something. But this one was pretty clear, and most people have one pretty clear one, and I think almost everyone put listening at number one or number two.
Gosh.
And seeing that is like, oh my God.
Yeah, it made me feel gross. Like,
awesome, because having a pain point identified and then feeling the pain is the first step to progress.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So I would say, like, when you confront, when you're ready to confront yourself, or when you're willing to confront yourself, we can make this the change challenge, because I think it's one of the better ones. Maybe there can be two change challenges. Maybe one that focuses on what we talked about, like figuring out where you stand between fear and shyness and aggression and violence when dealing with others, something like that. This one, when you're ready to confront yourself, right? And I think what we're talking about is probably the most powerful way to do it, which is to use your closest relationships as a mirror. Mm-hmm. And you can do it as formally or informally as you want. There are forms. There are feedback forms that you can get out there. You know, there's actually one that I thought was pretty decent from SHRM, the Society for Human Resource Management, that is soliciting feedback from it's like 360-degree feedback. People that are your boss, people that are your peer, people that are below you. So when you think about it, you need to apply that in a certain way to family and friends as well.
Yeah, I'd say don't go that formal.
Yeah, so you could go formal if you wanted with forms and yada yada.
Just send an email with a question.
Send an email or have a conversation, yeah. Or whatever it is. But initiate that, but be prepared to feel bad about it. And understand that if you want true feedback and from certain relationships, you need some element of anonymity something.
Yeah, there's a lot to it.
Yeah.
But it's... You asked earlier, why don't people change? Why don't people work on whatever? It doesn't matter. They don't feel the pain. That's it. We don't do anything unless we feel the pain. And that activity, the way I organized it, makes someone feel that pain, because that's the only way they'll change. All help is self-help. There's no help that someone gives you. You can't. No one can change you. It's always you end up changing yourself.
We actively avoid it, as a matter of fact. So you might suspect that you have a problem in some area, But you don't want that confrontation, especially from 360 degrees, from people who lead you, from people below you, from your family, and hearing a repetitive thing. Yeah. It's
if you're not prepared to change, don't do that activity.
Yeah, yeah, no, that's a good piece of advice. But you want to talk about a powerful change challenge. I believe that's a very powerful one.
Seek feedback from those you trust and love and take action on one piece of it. Yep. Would that summarize the change challenge?
That would summarize it.
And then the only one I'll add is find low risk situations to engage the art of confrontation. And you can pick whatever that is. It doesn't matter. Just very low risk, no matter what you get and what you give up, it doesn't matter. It won't impact your life that negatively.
Next time you're at Taekwondo, ask your dad for the Cheetos.
In front of your mat. I told him, I'm going to have to go Taekwondo on Master Winkler. He'd kick my butt. But yeah, that was funny. Well, hey, we've covered a lot here today. We've talked about internal confrontation, transactional confrontation, familial confrontation. We've talked about frequency, intensity, duration, emotions, planning, strategy, how you can alter the sense of reality around confrontation with substances. And really one thing that is important, and I believe to be at the core of it, choice. Opportunity costs. What am I giving up by confronting or not confronting? What am I getting by confronting or not confronting? So just go forth and do what this show's all about. Here at Life Lab, we experiment with life.